Hello and welcome to Stories in Harmony. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero, a journalist, marketing strategist, and brand storyteller who helps artists and entrepreneurs most powerfully share their brand stories to magnetize their ideal audience and grow their business. As you may have guessed, here at Stories in Harmony, we are big fans of storytelling. In addition to sharing the stories and life lessons of people from all walks of life, I also wanted to share some practical tips, strategies, and takeaways that you can use to elevate your own business through the use of storytelling. Today, I sit down with Taji Terillian, a fellow storytelling strategist and coach, and a trauma-informed business coach. We get really deep on how to use story to connect with your ideal audience, tips for putting yourself out there even if you are an introvert or feel reluctant to do so, for creating endless stories using your life and life experiences to create content in your business, and many other things. We really go kind of deep on what we both love, which is the power of storytelling. My friend connected me with Taji because she thought there might be some synergy in what we did, and boy was she right. When I saw her Instagram post about cultivating a storyteller's mindset in your business and using it for growth, it just resonated so powerfully, and I knew that we shared a lot of common values. I think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. I know I did. So please sit back and enjoy my talk with Taji. So Taji, I'm here with Taji. I'm so excited to be talking to you as a fellow storytelling coach and strategist, and so many things that I feel are synergistic between what we do. And so I looked at your Instagram and I saw so many wonderful gems that you were posting about the nature of storytelling and how to cultivate a storyteller's mindset. And I might just read a couple of them as a place start.
Okay, because sure.
They really, really resonated with me.
Okay.
One thing you said is to replace judgment with curiosity. And you can't tell your story if you're busy judging yourself.
Yes.
So compassionate curiosity is the way into the heart of the story. So that is something that I firmly believe too. And that I think being visible and sharing your story and putting yourself out there is also a bit of a journey of self-love and self-acceptance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's... Well, first of all, thank you for having me in this conversation. I love being in this conversation with you. And, you know, replacing judgment with curiosity is, that's something that I learned in my mindset coaching training. And it's really about kind of entering everything with an experimental mindset. And, you know, which just opens up possibility instead of having a very narrow view of things, right? And so with that comes exactly what you said, which is self-compassion and self-trust, right? Like those are the things that we need. Those are the things we need to feel good about ourselves, but they're also the things we need to do, I think, to access our creativity and our stories and our work. Like we have to approach it with some kindness and some compassion for ourselves. Otherwise, we get stuck, you know, in the stories everyone else is telling us versus our own stories.
Right. It's so true. And I think what you said about creativity, I know for myself, we were just talking about this before we were rolling. When I was working on a novel, it took quite a while because I was so self-critical and I was trying to, I don't know, I think I was comparing myself to someone like Toni Morrison, which is so ridiculous. Right? You know, there's no way that I would ever write like Toni Morrison, and just thinking, oh, it's not good enough. And then finally, when I was able to quiet some of those critical voices, is when I actually was able to get the work done. And even though it wasn't perfect, I was more compassionate with myself, thinking, well, it's good enough. You know, it's good enough to share and put out into the world and see what happens. But
that's
it
right.
was a journey.
Yes. Yeah. That's that perfectionism. That's that perfectionist mindset is so, I mean, who among us does not have some piece of that in us, right? Like it's so
right.
human, I think, to want to do everything perfect, right? And yet perfect is it's a myth. It doesn't actually exist. And so having some compassion for ourselves, for our actual experience and for what we actually are producing, that's the kind of the antidote to that perfection mindset stopping us, right, from doing the thing, whatever the thing is that we want to do. So good for you for your persistence. Oh. And you like kept going and you went against that. Those voices in our head, they get really loud.
They do. And I think that is one of the things that can prevent us from sharing our stories. And I definitely want to get to that. But I know we had talked a bit about, talking about the fact that storytelling can be the magic dust in your business and why that is. Mm-hmm. And so it would be great. I know we've discussed it a bit before, but I think it's one of the best ways of creating an authentic emotional connection with your audience and the people you're trying to reach. And as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing more powerful than that.
Absolutely. Well, exactly. I mean, I really believe that storytelling is the new marketing. Like it's really not that new, but it's just we are in a shift towards a real need for authenticity and connection, right? Even more so now than ever coming out of the pandemic. And I felt this coming, I felt this a few years ago coming into the pandemic even. We're just at that place where we want, the world is so divisive. We want connection with each other. We want to feel seen and heard, and we want that sense of belonging. And storytelling is the way to do it, because when you share a piece of yourself, it is like a little magic. It's magic dust to me. It is this magnetic magic dust that draws in the people who need to hear that story. The people who are going to say, oh my gosh, thank you so much for sharing that. I really needed to hear that. Me too. Whatever the response is. And if you can pair that, the intersection of those personal stories and your business and whatever your mission is in your business, finding that intersection and sharing those stories is it. I mean, I think that is how you grow community, which turns into clients or customer, whatever that is in your business, right? If you approach it as building community through storytelling first, you have such a beautiful base then.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree with that. And I think that maybe sometimes it's a little hard for people to know where to start, or they might think, and it's not only the origin story that we're talking about, mm-hmm. Why you founded your brand, or why, if you're an artist, why you do what you do. Mm-hmm. It's also, everyday things that happen to you in life that you can use as stories and content, because right now also in marketing, content is creating it regularly is so important.
Right.
And it requires a lot of showing up for that and creativity. And I know I myself am on a journey to be more consistent with that.
Me too, by the way. I coach other people in this, but I am also always working on that for myself. Yeah, absolutely.
I know the struggle is real, but it's so valuable and important. And if you can figure out how to take stories from your life, anything from a lesson your yoga teacher taught you to what happened at the grocery store, you'll have an endless source of creating stories and content. And I think, one of the things that I don't think we have discussed this, but one of the techniques I find really helpful is to list out certain instances either in your month or your life. You could go decade by decade that were real turning points for you or really memorable for some reason, even if you don't see how it translates back to your work or your business.
Right.
And then write down what those are, the feelings that came up around them, and then the lessons you learned from them.
That's it. That's so good. I do a similar exercise with folks, especially when we are trying to identify the kind of bigger story, right? The kind of how did I end up here exactly? I kind of know, but I'm not really sure. Identifying those moments, those transformations is what I always think of them as. Mm-hmm. It's so helpful. And I think, but to your point, it's not just the big stories, right? And I think that gets people kind of tripped up sometimes. They think, okay, maybe I do have a big story about how I started my business, but then how do I keep showing up with story? How do I keep sharing what's going on? And I think it is in the everyday. It's paying attention to that same, it's paying attention to feelings, which you mentioned, which I think is so important, is not just looking at what happened in my day today, but noticing how did you feel throughout your day? Were there moments where you felt really strongly in any specific feeling? And can you just notice that? And can you kind of capture that? And is that a seed to a story? It might not be, but the more you get used to noticing it, the more little seeds that you'll have.
This happened to me. This is really specific. My audience won't relate to it. Mm. But then if you can drill down to what the lesson was, or for example, I guess it wouldn't hurt to share a story that came to me recently that I'm calling the nun hotline.
Oh, I already love it.
The nun hotline. So this was a few years ago. I had been working at a university job that wasn't terribly challenging, and I felt ready for something new, and the opportunity to work for a music magazine that I had read for years growing up that I loved came up to be their LA correspondent. So I thought, you know, I don't know that I even have a chance, but I've got to go for it. And so I did. I applied. You know, I did some writing tests. I actually took the risk of flying myself to New York for the interview.
Amazing.
And just thought, I'll have to go for it. And I did. I ended up getting the job, which was
so good.
Was wonderful. But then the next thing that happened, you know, I went from being so excited to the next day literally paralyzed with fear. Imposter syndrome set in, something fierce. And I was so worried that I wouldn't be able to do the job. Part of it was making all sorts of connections and inroads for the magazine that was based in London, in LA, with contacts that I would be developing and finding 5 news stories a day and writing those stories.
Wow.
I thought, how am I ever going to do this? And so I went for a 2-day little mini retreat in Santa Barbara just to get out of my own head a bit. And there were two nuns that I met over dinner one night. And we were just chatting about, you know, why we were there, what we were doing there. And I told them about the job and they were very excited for me, but they could see that there was something else I wasn't saying. And so they asked me about it. And I confessed that I was so nervous about being able to do the job and do a good job. And, you know, it went on and on. So they actually were so lovely. And they said, you know, we can tell just from talking to you, you're conscientious, you're driven, you're going to be fine. Whenever the self-doubt creeps in or these worried thoughts or feelings, here's our phone number.
Call us when
you can't believe in yourself, and we will believe in you.
Oh my gosh, that gives me so much hope for humanity.
It really made so much difference. Even just having their phone number, I put it in my wallet, just knowing it was there. I sadly didn't ever use it, but just the thought that they had faith in me, and they thought I could do it at a time when I couldn't believe in myself. And it all went well, you know, the ground running when I got home and, you know, made some calls to people just in advance of starting the job. And I think it was largely down to somebody else reminding me that I can do this. And so, you know, even I guess it goes to show that even when you think you've achieved something that you really have been hoping to achieve, that self-doubt can still creep in.
Absolutely. And I think that your story is so relatable. I think that feeling of imposter syndrome, right? I mean, people who are famous that we would look at as so accomplished have admitted to feeling that imposter syndrome. So we know that it's human to feel that, right? And it's something that I find a lot in myself for sure throughout my life. And also, it's so interesting. It's something that comes up so often with entrepreneurs and people starting their businesses, right? On the one hand, business, you know, founders and entrepreneurs are generally speaking, you know, very focused and very kind of like excited about whatever it is they're doing and passionate about their business. And also they are flooded with that imposter syndrome, right? And so almost every business owner, entrepreneur I've ever talked to has felt some combination of that, you know, not only in the beginning, but to your point, like once you get started, you're like, okay, I'm started. That's when it really sinks in. It's like, okay, now I have to show up and do the work. And I'm scared I'm not going to be good enough, you know? And I think that's, as you were saying before, the, you know, drilling down to like, what is it really about? And that's the connection point to the story. I always think, you know, we all, to be human is to have so many of the same feelings, right? So we all have imposter syndrome. We all on some basic level in our life at some point have worried about not being good enough, right? Whether it's our parents, our partners, our, you know, for our kids, for our friends, for our job. And everyone can relate to that, right? Like everyone, they may not have your experiences, but if you talk about what it feels like to not feel good enough, and then you share how you got through that, that's a story everyone can relate to.
Yeah. And I feel that that is so common. Things that we might dismiss are actually golden for storytelling, just right for telling stories.
Yeah. Well, and something I know we've talked about a little bit before is, yeah, I think, and this is something, again, I'm always amazed that every single person I talk to says this, which is, no one's going to be interested in my story. Like everyone's just convinced that no one's going to be interested in their story, regardless of folks that have the most just kind of cinematic stories and the people that have very maybe commonplace stories, right? Everyone feels that way. And again, it comes back to this, you know, perfectionism, this, am I good enough? This, you know, is being vulnerable going to be too scary? Like these are these common feelings that we have. But to me, like the fact that we all have those common fears is proof that our stories are also going to connect us, right? Like we're connected by the fear because we all feel it. And we're also going to be connected by those stories, no matter what they are.
Yeah, it's so interesting. This morning of all days, I just opened the New York Times while I was drinking coffee this morning. And there was a story about journalists who shared first-person personal stories when they're used to reporting more factually and on the news and not injecting themselves into their stories.
Yes.
And what that experience is like for them. And it just didn't come naturally to them because, like me, who has a background in journalism, you're supposed to be as objective as you're able to be and not insert yourself into most stories you write.
That's right.
And you're more like a fly on the wall, kind of as objectively as you can, reporting on all sides of the story rather than being inserting yourself into the story. And they were saying that it did feel really scary and very vulnerable, but none of them regretted doing it once they did it. Like the night before the article came out, and of course it's the New York Times, so a lot of people are going to see it.
Right, that's a big moment. Big one. Yes.
They couldn't sleep. But then the next day, you know, and the day after, when people started saying, yes, that happened to me too, or I know someone who is in a similar situation, even though there were some naysayers, none of them regretted sharing in that way. Yeah. And I thought that was really powerful.
I love hearing that because that's been my experience in my own life. It's been kind of my anecdotal experience with folks that I work with and, you know, friends and anybody who's sharing stories, whether it's, you know, I'm also part of the kind of the moth storytelling community, you know, so I think about that personal storytelling, but then also, again, I think anytime you're showing up on Instagram, in a newsletter, that's a potential for you to tell a story. You often are sharing something that is like a story. So I think of all of that as storytelling. And it's everybody feels vulnerable. Like I love hearing that story that even people who are professional writers feel that way because everyone feels that way. Yeah. That vulnerability is real. It's real.
It's so true. And I also love that none of them regretted it.
That's right. That's right. It's so,
I mean, that it helped others.
It is. Exactly. I think that's it. I have a profound, that was my very profound experience is, you know, I used to have terrible stage fright. I grew up playing classical music, but hating being on stage. I practiced hours a day because that's what you did. I played the flute. So, you know, you practice hours a day. I got very good, but I also hated and I loved practicing because I loved like making music with other people. I still love that. To me, that's like one of the most amazing experiences, but I hated being on stage in front of an audience. And I started in third grade. I finished when I was in college. So I did all those years and I never got used to it. I hated it. And in college, I finally figured out I had a real crossroads where it's like, am I going to continue with music or not? And I chose not to because I did not want to be on stage. Oh, yeah. And years later, you know, I had, again, terrible stage fright, like to the point where I would get sick before going on stage, just like sweaty palms, shaking, the whole thing. And years later, I took a live storytelling class with someone who's become kind of my mentor, my storytelling mentor, and got me into the Moth. And I got on stage and told the most personal story I could. And it was a little bit like pulling the Band-Aid off. I'm like, I just have to do it. And I did it. And it was life-changing, not only because I finally did the big scary thing, because of course, you know, once you do the scary thing, it's not as scary, right? So I did it. But also because of everyone's reaction afterwards. I think that's what kept me going. I thought I would just get up and tell the story just to have that one-time experience of like, okay, I know I can do this. But it launched this whole other part of my life and in many ways my business now, because everyone in that room had a reaction and many, many people came up and said, thank you so much. I really needed to hear that. Like, this has changed me in this way. You know, that reaction is, I realized that finding my voice not only helped me, but finding my voice was helping other people find their voice too. Right. And that connection was so, I mean, it gives me chills just because like that connection is what this work is about to me. And I, yeah, it's so special.
Oh, that's so wonderful, Tashi. That's amazing. And I think, you know, that's a journey I'm still on. I think this is part of it.
Yeah.
You know, trying to, because I've been an introvert and felt shy and stage fright my whole life, most of it. And, you know, I think that it's interesting because as an entrepreneur and who markets themselves, because I've always spent my career marketing other clients, right. You know, and so I can help them be front and center and tell their stories, but I don't have to tell my own stories really. But now the nature of my business is shifting a bit. And so it's very valuable. And it is a journey, you know. I've been learning how to do like 60-second Instagram reels where I tell a whole story over, you know, the span of 5 years in 60
Amazing.
Seconds. And so I've just been trying to have some fun with it and helping clients do something similar. And it all translates. I think people have said that you only need to be a couple of steps ahead on the path than your clients, you know, kind of figuring it all out. I mean, you could have it all figured out, but it's okay if you don't.
Yeah. And I think absolutely there's going to be, I think of like for myself, for instance, I have a lot of years of experience as an entrepreneur. I had another business before this one. And so I've been most of my adult life, I've been running my own business for a long time with a partner, but this has been my life. So on the one hand, I feel like I have that business know-how, but in other aspects, I am just a couple steps ahead, to your point. So when I work with folks, it's like, you know, I can give you some of the business coaching that maybe you need, but also when it comes to all the storytelling and all that, I'm just a few years ahead. I'm like, this is still fresh. It's still new, right? I still know what it feels like to be scared, to share things and to be nervous what people's reactions are going to be. I still know what it feels like to have that imposter syndrome. Oh, yeah.
I hope that can make us more effective in some ways to know those feelings. And that's kind of a realization I had too, that if I'm going to be able to help other people do it, I need to be able to walk the talk. So
yep,
it's all part of the journey.
Yep.
But it's, you know, it's a fun journey, and I really admire, you know, there are mentors, digital mentors, as you might call them, who I don't actually know personally, but who are doing such a great job of it out there, online.
Absolutely.
And, I've learned so much from them as well as people in my life and, you know, colleagues. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of fun to see it evolve.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and we talked a little bit too about the neuroscience of storytelling and why it resonates so much with people. And I'll just share a quote that might open it up.
I love it. Yes, please. I could talk about this stuff for hours. I love this stuff.
Yeah, me too. So it's an article that was in the Harvard Business Review. And it's one that I use a lot when I do presentations to entrepreneur groups and things to kind of introduce the topic of storytelling for business. And it says, a story can go where quantitative analysis is denied admission, our hearts. Data can persuade people, but it doesn't inspire them to act. To do that, you need to wrap your vision in a story that fires the imagination and stirs the soul.
So good. That so a good.
Good quote. I love that.
Yes.
I wrote it down because I knew I would butcher it.
Yes, it's so good.
But yeah, so what is it, do you think, about stories that connects us and resonates with us and makes them so memorable? They're apparently, research has shown they're up to 22 times more memorable than facts alone.
Yeah. And which, I mean, we all know that, right? Like we've all sat through really boring presentations or something boring and we just like some little piece of it kind of gets stuck in our brain, but we just forget everything. And then we've had a story told to us that could have been told just in a random passing and that sticks with us for years, right? Like that we know this to be true. What I think is so cool is that that's a reflective of how our brain is working. Like our brain, you know, this is such a cool thing I once read too, is that when someone is telling a story and they are sharing again the kind of emotions of whatever is happening in that story, they're called mirror neurons. Like we as the listener will kind of, those same feelings will fire up, those same neurons in our brain will fire up, so we feel as though we are having the same experience, right? So that is, I mean, that's physiologically happening in us, which I think is just so incredible that our bodies and our brains are doing that. And then it sticks because then we've had that emotional experience, right? It's not just something we've thought about, but we felt it. And once you've felt something, so it's there. It's in you, right? Like it's in your tissue somehow, right? And I think, there's nothing like a story to create connection for that reason. It's like, I think it also just comes back to our most basic human kind of desire is to belong, right? Is to know that it's our kind of animal need to belong to the pack. It's our emotional need to belong to our families, to our groups, to our people. And stories help do that. And so I think we are just primally attracted to story. It just feels like it's like a magnet that we can't deny. And if you can, accept that. If you can accept that story has that power and you can open yourself up to sharing yourself with story, then you're going to feel that.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's so fascinating. And hearing a story can release oxytocin in the brain, which it enhances our ability to empathize and relate to people. And like you said, you almost feel like you're the protagonist in the story.
That's right.
And I don't know. I think that when you're able to use that to talk about yourself and your work, rather than just saying, listing the benefits of your service or your product or even the art that you're creating, if you can talk about your hero's journey and why, maybe some obstacles you've overcome on your path that led you to where you are now, it's certainly going to resonate. And it doesn't have to be something that you believe is earth-shattering or completely unique, because just by nature of the fact that we are all unique, your story is incredibly unique and valuable. Mm-hmm. Every story is valuable.
So. Every story matters, right? Yeah. And we all have our own unique, kind of lens through which our stories is being told. And also, we're all the same somehow. That's what I love about stories, is that they unite us by those familiar feelings that we all feel. And yet the details of them are always unique. They're always something special that only you have experienced, that only you know.
Right. And I think those details are part of what makes it so rich. Sometimes the temptation, and I've done this too, is to want to be as universal and generic as possible. Mm-hmm. So you can hit as, wide an audience as you possibly can. But I think we've learned even in listening to songs by some of the best songwriters, like how specific they are. And then you may not have had that exact experience, but the universality of it is so much more powerful when those details are very personal.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. If you're sharing something that's very surface, it's only going to be felt in a very surface way. Mm-hmm. And if you want to have a big impact, you have to dig a little deeper. I think I love the analogy of songwriting and storytelling, because ultimately, of course, songwriting is storytelling. It's just a different, you know, a different way to do it. But I think also with something like with songwriting, you know, there are ways in which pop songs are made. There's, you know, there are ways in which a hook is written so that it sticks in our mind. There are these tools. And so I feel like that was storytelling too. There are some tools. There are some kind of the nuts and bolts of how you actually craft a story that is really good to know. That's very helpful. But, and still you need to add in your personal touch. You need to add in your experiences, your vulnerability, your lens. Otherwise it just sounds like everyone else's and it's boring.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. And Taji, you have something unique in what you do, and that is that you're a trauma-informed business coach.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I would love to. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. I know, strangely, I could talk about trauma forever also, but I guess the place to start is to say that what I mean by trauma-informed business coach is being able to show up in your business as your full self. So it's really a lot of what we've been talking about. For me, the genesis of it is, you know, when I pivoted into coaching, I had taken a mindset coaching training, and I had, you know, I had been bringing, again, my business experience with me. So I thought, okay, maybe business coaching, maybe mindset. I hadn't quite identified where I wanted to be yet. I love storytelling. I've been doing so much personal storytelling, so that got woven in. But then I took a trauma-informed space-holding training with Katie Kurtz is her name, and she's kind of one of my digital mentors, as you said before, someone I really admire. And I finally had some language to what I had already been doing with folks, which is kind of breaking down these old kind of capitalist patterns that are very rigid, and allowing us to build business in a new way that is reflective of our whole self. So to me, what that means is, can you build a business that does not lead to burnout? You know, can you lead a business that leaves space for your mental health? You know, can you build a business and sustain a business that leaves room for past traumas, which most of us have experienced, current traumas, which as we've all been experiencing, can you leave room for you to show up as a human with that trauma and give yourself the space, right? I think we've been told this message for so long now that the right way, quote unquote, the right way to do business is to kind of act a certain way. And that certain way is not emotional, you know, very analytical, right? And with a lot of boundaries, with a lot of structure. And there's a place for that, but that also is really limiting. That's what I think. And I think that when you, again, as someone who, for me, I know I had a business for years that I completely burned out in. And one of the reasons I burned out is I left no room for my mental health. I left no room for me to work through personal trauma. I didn't leave any room for the kind of healing that I needed to do. And so although that business was successful, I ultimately burned out and it took a tremendous toll on me. And now it's like, I want to help people build businesses that don't do that, that actually give space for you to be your whole, healthy, full self.
Taji, that's so, so important. And how can you give us a tip or two for how you might go about doing that?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things that I love, like, this is a Katie Kurtz thing. She talks, you know, there's the question of kind of what is trauma, right? And there's many definitions. If you were to look it up, you'd find many different definitions, some clinical, some more colloquial, I suppose you could say. But Katie Kurtz says that trauma is too much, too fast, too soon. When we experience something too much, too fast, too soon, that's what triggers our nervous system to kind of go on overdrive, right? We've all experienced that somehow. For some of us, it's been huge life-altering moments, what we call big T trauma. And for some of us, it's been smaller moments, little T trauma, but it still sends our nervous system kind of on high alert, right? And that will either lead to like a fight or flight or freeze response. And so to answer your question, the way to do this is to be considering trauma as you're building your business and figuring out ways that you're going to leave space for yourself to not go too much, too fast, too soon. To when you do feel your nervous system kind of peak up, which if you don't know what I'm talking about, what that is, that's like a stress moment. That's like a moment where suddenly you're kind of like, oh, why am I grinding my teeth? Or why am I holding my breath? Or why am I like clenching my fist? We all have those moments, right?
My producer, I have to say, my producer, Darren, gave me that exact example just an hour ago.
Oh my gosh, we're talking it's about so that true. Same thing. Yeah. I mean, I'm a teeth clencher, so I always go there first. But we know when we have those moments, when we have those stress reactions in our body, that is a clue that something's not right. Again, we've been taught that we should ignore that clue and just keep pushing and just keep hustling. So the way you run a trauma-informed business is that you don't do that, is that you don't hustle, you don't push past it, you don't keep going, you give yourself the space to pause. And what I help people do is find, you know, once you've paused, that's a really big step, is recognizing it's happening and pausing, then what do you do? How do you regulate your nervous system? And there are lots of ways to do that through, you know, breath, like just simple as just taking a few deep breaths, grounding yourself with something that feels like good to you. There's lots of teeny tiny ways to do it. It doesn't have to be, I'm not talking about, you know, a 30-minute meditation in the middle of your day. It's nothing like that. It's just simple things to allow yourself the space to regulate before you go on. And I mean, that seems so simple, but we don't do that. You know, we don't. And that's, again, I didn't do that for most of my life. And it led to extreme burnout and health issues and all kinds of stuff because I just didn't give myself that.
It's so important. And we often don't. And I'm guilty of not doing that a lot, especially when deadlines are looming.
Yes.
And as they have been recently. But there was a lesson that a woman I saw an acupuncturist and healer gave to me. And that was to actually take yourself out of the lineup just for 5 minutes before you get to the point where you're like complete ball of stress. Like,
my gosh,
you
yes.
just, when you just feel it rising and you know that something is coming, if you're self-aware enough to identify it, and maybe, you know, if you work from home a lot of the time, like I do, I'm fortunate that I can just lay down on the floor in my office and, you know, put my knees up and my back straight and just like do deep breathing or a quick 5 minute meditation. And then I'm like refreshed. It helps so much. And if you can, like you're saying, do that a few times throughout the day, it makes such a difference.
It really does. I mean, and I think, you know, being able to recognize that in yourself is actually a really huge thing. You know, I think a lot of people can't. I think, again, a lot of people haven't been given the space or the tools or even the permission to stop and pay attention to themselves. So sometimes it starts with just the baby step of like, I'm just going to pay attention to myself. I'm just going to notice when's that happening? You know, kind of just like make a little mental note. It sometimes starts with just that. Yeah. You know,
and even if I have a friend who works for a major media company in Hollywood, and I think she has a glass office so everyone can see her, but she doesn't care. She still does it.
Good for her.
She takes time she's out a leader. On the floor. And like, that's wonderful. So I feel if more people are aware of that and do that, it will just, you know, make it okay for other people.
Exactly. Well, and that's my biggest, to me, that's kind of the purpose of this is like, I want businesses to be led by people who are trauma-informed so that they can create trauma-informed workspaces so that they can, you know, to me, it's this kind of trickle down, but it's really like all of us working together to create a new way of being, a new way of having a successful business. You know, I think, you know, people who are maybe anti-capitalism get like a rap of like, oh, we don't want to make any money. That's not it at all. Of course, I want to make money with my business, as everyone does. I want to do it in a way that actually supports my well-being and everyone around me, right? My family, my child, my coworkers, the people I work with, everything.
Yeah, there's another digital mentor, Jaya Rose, who's also in the storytelling space. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know her, but she, I think the way she markets herself as a coach for highly sensitive people, HSPs, and so people who feel things really deeply, because she does, and I do too, so I can really relate to that. And it's part of her business model also is to make space for that and be aware of that and make sure she doesn't work too many hours. I think she says she works about 10 hours a week on average. And
amazing. I'm definitely not anywhere close to that. Yeah, it's aspirational.
That might be like maybe some more on top of that with marketing, but you know, with clients or something like that. And she's got a multiple six-figure business and has managed to do that by while still honoring herself and her body and her mental health.
That's so good.
So to have more people out there sharing about that and doing it, I think is so powerful.
Well, that's it. I mean, to, you know, when you're a leader, I also just think of any business, any kind of business owner, entrepreneur, you're a leader, you know, you're leading, you know, maybe you're just a solopreneur working by yourself, but ultimately, you know, you're carving out a new thing. You're making something new, right? This is an opportunity to rethink how we make things. The other thing I love what you just said about that she says it's for highly sensitive people, because I think it's so important to really name, like to give that a name. Like the fact that she says for highly sensitive people means that people who identify as highly sensitive, you know, they see themselves in her work then. And they say, oh, great, like finally a place for me. Again, a place I can belong, a place that someone's going to get me, you know. And that I think is, it's so huge, right? It has a huge impact.
Yeah. And I've been, you know, while I work with people and organizations and all walks of life, I feel that this part of my journey, I don't know, one of the people I hope that my work might speak to is people who have felt a little more soft-spoken or shy. You know, part of my journey, you can't tell because I'm sitting down, but I'm over six feet tall. And I think as a kid getting teased, you know, I literally tried to make myself smaller.
Yeah.
And it's something you think, oh, as an adult, I do like being tall now that I'm a grown up, but a lot of those feelings and thoughts stayed with me, as well as some things that happened during my upbringing to make me feel my voice didn't matter so much. Mm-hmm. And so those are things that it's been a lifelong journey to unravel those and kind of find my voice. So
it's so important. And that's such a great example, because it doesn't, again, you know, I think we get into this because we are in such a highly competitive culture. We get into this place of like, well, is my trauma bad enough to be trauma? Is my experience bad enough to be, you know, important, quote unquote? The answer is yes. Yes to all. Of course it is. And you have to tap into yourself to think, okay, what are the things that I need to heal? And it can be, it can be anything, right? And of course it's things from our childhood. I mean, that doesn't, of course, right? This is when we form our identities, who we are as people, when we, you know, we create our attachments to other humans like this, you know, when we are either cared for or not cared for. Those are important times. And what happens during those times, it sticks with us. Even if we kind of think our way out of it as an adult, it sticks and stays in our body, right? Like, you know, when you have that insecure feeling that feels the same way as you felt when you were like a 12-year-old, it will still come up as like a 45-year-old. It will come up, right? And that just goes to show it lives inside.
And I guess to circle back or to come full circle a bit, sharing those stories can be a way of helping release those things in your body. We were talking to an artist, Jaguar Jones, recently, and she had, I guess it was complex PTSD. Mm-hmm. And she found, because she started her life as her professional life as a financial analyst, but really wanted to be an artist. Mm. And her family frowned upon that. Mm. And so she found that it was a vessel that her songwriting, she pursued songwriting and visual art, and her art became a vessel to pour a lot of her trauma into and get it out of her body.
Mm-hmm. And, I love that so much.
Yeah.
Just the idea of, I can relate to that on many levels. One, I also have complex PTSD from my childhood. So I had a very traumatic and abusive childhood. And that's where in my own healing, that's where my interest in trauma has come from, partly first because of my own experience, because I've seen how it's kind of had a stranglehold on my life during the first part of my life, and how healing and moving through it has helped me, you know, and through work, especially because I am someone who's had my own businesses, it's come out in my work, right? So my first business being so, again, really leaning hard into that hustle culture and just like burning out, that was so reflective of unresolved trauma and me just pushing. And then now I'm really treating this other business, this new business, as a place to do that healing, as a container, you know, to hold some of this, some of the trauma, and just get it out of the body. I think that's so, it's so important. You know, one of the other things that I do is I am a co-founder of a group called Co-op for sexual trauma survivors. And one, we're actually having an exhibit in LA in December. But it, what we talk about so much is exactly that. It's like, how do you get trauma out of your body and, you know, into a container? Can it be art? Can it be a story that you voice and find the power in your voice? Can it be something you write down? And when I say art, I don't mean like you're an artist. Like you have to kind of identify as an artist. Everyone has that in them to use creativity as a way to process trauma, right? And so that's another thing that I do is kind of trauma-informed story circles, especially around getting the kind of big T traumas out of your body, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's so powerful. And as you said, you don't have to identify as an artist, although we all have creativity and artistry in us, but it could even be as simple as journaling and that's getting right. that story out or just voicing it with someone you trust. And then we talked a little bit about this on the phone the other day about boundaries, and you may not feel comfortable sharing all of the details of your trauma, and that's really okay. It's up to you what you feel that you want to share. And there might be ways to share that feel safe for you and that could really benefit others, but there's no, you know, only share what feels right and true for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, that is, you know, to be trauma informed is to hold agency, personal agency, as the most important thing. Like that is the kind of cornerstone of trauma-informed care, whether it's in a clinical setting or whether it's in creativity or the work that I do. It is about you get to decide, because, you know, the traumas that we experience, it's too much, too fast, too soon. It's things kind of coming at us and us not feeling like we're in control, right? So the healing of that is often, let me take my agency back. Let me decide what is right for me. And that absolutely applies to how you're sharing yourself. Something as kind of mundane as how are you sharing yourself online in your business? Absolutely. Like if you don't have some boundaries around that, you're not going to feel safe. You're going to feel like it's all too much, too fast, too soon, right? Because it is. It's moving a mile a minute. And you have to decide for yourself what feels good. And often it takes experimenting. It takes kind of dipping your toe in the water a little at a time and figuring out where is that boundary? But you have to hold the reins. Like it has to be your choice. And I'd work with a lot of people around that too, because sometimes, you know, I share very openly a lot of my personal stories because I have this experience in personal storytelling. But the first thing I always say to my clients is like, because most of them are, you know, come to me, it's like, I really want to like be more personal, but I don't know how. I really want to share my story, but I don't know how. It's like, great. You do not have to share your deepest, darkest secrets and your biggest pains, you know, to get some likes on social media. Like that is not what we're doing here. Right, that is not what this is about. This is about finding the connection with other humans and your business. And that can be through something so simple. That can be through, again, all these kind of mini transformations that you've gone through in your life. It doesn't have to be through these big, painful things, unless you want to share those. And then, you know, the fact is, if you feel good sharing that, great, because someone also needs to hear that. So, you know, we all just need to show up in whatever way we feel good. And that's us doing enough.
I completely agree. And sometimes it might be in the moment, you may want to share something about yourself that might help someone you're with feel comfortable sharing. Because I find this is a lot of the work that Brené Brown does around vulnerability and shame, and how, you know, I think that when we're vulnerable, we give people space.
Permission, right.
Vulnerable as well. So
it's so true. I don't know if we talked about this, but something, my favorite way to talk about this is permission plus tools. I think we all need permission plus tools to do whatever it is we want to do, whatever creative work you're doing, whatever work you're doing. You need permission for everything we've been talking about, permission to be vulnerable, permission to set your own boundaries, permission to do it your own way, you know, to do it a different way. And then you need the tactile tools to do it, right? Like back to storytelling, it's like you need the permission to actually share your story, and you probably need some help with the tools of story crafting. How do you actually tell a story? How do you, what's a beginning, middle, and end? You know, what's appropriate for, or what kind of makes sense on one platform versus another? Like those are some tools, but you can't even access those if you don't first have permission. Right. You have to have both.
And where do you think that permission comes from ourselves?
Yeah. Well, exactly. I think that it often takes another person, quote unquote, giving you permission, but really what they're doing is they're just opening up the ability for you to give yourself permission, right? Because no one can actually do that. But I know I sometimes feel like that's what I'm doing for people, but really it always comes full circle and it's usually them coming back saying, okay, now I finally feel like I have given myself permission to do whatever it is I needed to do.
Yeah. And that can be so powerful to have someone else do that too. But yeah, ultimately it comes back to us giving ourselves permission. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder than it sounds sometimes.
Yeah. By the way, this is all so hard. Like it's not to make this sound easy, right? I think that like this thing of sharing, of being vulnerable, of storytelling, it's hard. It is. And it's like we need help doing it. And we just need examples of other people doing it, I think, to normalize that it's something that we can do, but also normalize that it's hard because it's really against the grain in some ways. We have not been encouraged to be like in our truth. We've not been encouraged to show up as our full selves. We've largely been encouraged, I think, as people in this culture to compartmentalize ourselves, right? And just to kind of show whatever is acceptable in a given moment. And so this is hard. It feels hard because it is hard.
Yeah, it's true. But I feel that the more you do it, it can actually sometimes feel fun and freeing.
Yeah.
It's just kind of getting the wheels in motion, and some days obviously are harder than others, but.
Well, and you know what, that's a great example. That right there is a great example of like, of a trauma-informed business, is that some days are going to be harder than others. And that's an example I give all the time, actually, is like you might be going along, you might be launching a new product, have a new thing you're doing. You have a workshop you're running or a course, like you're doing these, you're in it, you're in flow, you're doing it. And then out of seemingly nowhere, you have a bad day. Like, we all have bad days, right? You have a bad day where I would argue it's probably some trauma that's come up and like smacked you upside the head that you don't even realize, but it could have been anything, right? Like, we have bad days. And are you going to give yourself a minute to process that? And do you have the tools to process that? Or are you just going to push against it and keep going? Like, that's an example of giving yourself that moment to process, to just take a minute, and then to get back into it. And maybe taking a minute means taking the rest of the day off. Maybe it means 5 minutes in the bathroom. I don't know, right? Like, it depends on the circumstances. But just, again, permission and tools to do that.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Tools are huge. I've recently tried something new. I've mentioned before that the voices in my head that aren't particularly helpful they tend to be loudest in the morning while I'm still in bed after I've just woken up. And I've tried this new tool that I just kind of came up with a couple of weeks ago, but I'm actually loving it.
Oh.
I don't let myself believe any of the stories I tell myself about myself and my life while I'm lying in bed.
Oh, I love that.
And so it's actually been helpful because it takes me out of going down that rabbit hole with them and pulls me more into witness mode. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look at this story you're telling. It may be true. It may not be true. This worst case scenario probably won't happen. And so, and so it's kind of given me that, that space to just think, okay, well, I don't need to believe those stories and let's get on with my day. And I get up and get out of bed and I've been really productive.
Wonderful.
So I'm sure there are days when that might not work.
Sure.
But for the past few days, it's been really powerful.
That's amazing. What a great idea. I that just goes to show, right? What a great idea to like kind of stay in your body and use something like location, like I'm in bed and not in bed. That's such a great just physical way to kind of create like a new habit for yourself and a mindset shift. That's wonderful. I love it.
So tools are, they're so important. And sometimes you just come up with them out of nowhere.
Yes.
And other times people share them
with
you.
That's right.
Both great.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, Tashi. Well, I feel like we've covered so much. Is there anything else?
Oh my goodness.
You wanted to explore before we wind down here?
I know. Have we? I have no. It feels like it's been 5 minutes. I have no idea.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't know.
There was one other thing that we had talked about, just speaking of tools, and we touched on some ways of creating stories around what you do before, where you list instances in your life that are really memorable or impactful. Mm-hmm. That's a great technique. But one other one I think is to identify your core values as a brand and a person.
That's
or
right.
both. And then I think it's also good, in addition to listing the values, to list your beliefs around those mm-hmm. values. Mm-hmm. And then you can find those stories throughout your daily life. So is that something that's
very similar? Yep. Yeah. I have a lot of the same approach where I almost always start with values. I think, again, a lot of people think about, you know, they think, okay, I need to, again, come up with my business origin story, or I need to, you know, well, actually business origin story is a great example. That's something I do a lot with people. And so, but it's not just, okay, tell me how you started your business. It starts with what's important to you. Like, what do you believe in? What's important to you? What are your core values personally? And then the other thing that I always like to do is, again, centered on feelings, because I know feelings are the thing that connect us, and they're often at the root of a good story. So what I mean by that is I'll ask people, I'll say, you know, how do you want to feel when you are running your business? Like, as the entrepreneur, as the founder, as the person running the show, how do you want to feel when you interact with your business? Let's come up with some words for that. And then how do you want your customers to feel, your community to feel when someone interacts with your brand, your products, your services? What are the feelings you're going for, right? So having those feeling words, having those values, having your beliefs, that becomes this kind of treasure trove to then pull from, as you said, to find the stories that match that. Right. So a lot of times it'll say, like, for me, one of my values always, and by the way, they change, I think, over time. We, you know, I've answered this question differently about what my values are, but one that's always at the center of it for me is connection. Like, I connected. Oh, good. Connected is like connected. I believe that us connecting as humans is like the most important thing we can be doing. I believe in that deeply. I also know that I want to feel really connected. That's when I feel really good. And I also want my people to feel connected to each other, to me, to, you know, the greater good. Like, I want all of that connection. And so as an example, if someone else was to say that to me, I would then say, okay, when are the times in your life where you felt really connected? When are the times in your life you have not felt really connected? And was there some kind of turning point or transition or transformation that happened that got you from not connected to connected, right? Like, that's a way to kind of excavate, like, what's the story, right? And a lot of times, again, it may not be some huge aha moment that you've had. It might just be a series of moments that have created the transformation in yourself. But being able to weave those pieces together, that's a story to tell about what matters to you in your business that it'll resonate with people.
Yeah, absolutely. Connection is such a powerful one. And inspiration is one of my integrity and inspiration. And I believe, you know, that inspiration can come from unlikely sources if you're present and paying attention. And also that our stories can serve as such powerful inspiration for others, kind of like a light on the path for what might be possible in their own lives. Yeah. And I have a little story about connection and inspiration, I think, because my former hairdresser, she was starting a business. And it was like mobile beauty services on a bus. And she told one of her clients her vision for it and why she loved doing it. And part of what she was doing was going to homeless communities and volunteering and helping
awesome.
To spruce them up, as she puts it, and you know, feel really confident about their appearance. And she just loves doing it. And I think the passion for what she was doing when she shared her story came through to her client, who was in a position to be able to invest in her business. And
amazing.
Yeah. And so that is an example of her why and her story and connection creating.
Yes. And yeah. Also, you know, again, it's not just that it's such a great example, because it's like, okay, there are lots of hairdressers out there. There's lots of people who do hair. There are even lots of people who have mobile hair. Like, she's not the first person with that idea. But what she has is like a deeper purpose. And she didn't just, and it's not just that she's doing something philanthropic with her business, which, great. Yes, let's all be doing that, more of that. But what it comes down to is not just that she wanted to help someone get a better haircut, but she wanted to help them feel better about themselves. She wanted to help them, you know, she wanted to like give them this feeling that this confidence, this, which again, there's like no price on that. That's so profound, right? To each of us to be able to feel really good about ourselves for even just a minute. That's so powerful. And that's the thing that makes her vision and her mission special. And I'm sure that's what connected. That's probably the thing that really drew in that investor. Yeah, that's huge. I love that story so much.
I feel like I could talk to you about storytelling all day. I think it's something we're both obviously very passionate Same. About.
Yeah.
But Taji, it's been a pleasure, and maybe you'll consider coming back.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me. I could absolutely talk about this for hours. No question. And no, I love what you're doing. I love, you know, finding other people that have this passion for storytelling. And, you know, I really believe there is like, we are better together, you know, as like, we are both story coaches. We both do work. We both do a lot of similar work, and there's room for all of us to do this work. Yeah, and the more, the better.
I feel the same way. Yeah. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in to Stories in Harmony podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you heard, please remember to like, follow, and subscribe, and recommend us to a friend. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero, a marketing and storytelling strategist and coach. You can find out more about me at lauraferrero.co and my business, Story Harmony. Thanks again for tuning in.